welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. We have another great show dealing today with metaphysics and spirituality and some things in science. And as a matter of fact, I was just talking to our engineer about an idea we had. I'm going to talk about it tonight since I don't think it was picked as what is supposedly one of the 100 ideas from Google, but I guess they only came up with 16. And I thought I'd mention it again tonight. I know I've mentioned it in prior shows. But I just throw that into the mix. And if you would like to participate, you can by calling in. The number's right on your screen somewhere. And that's great. If you would love to call in, I would like to hear from you. If you're calling from the U.S. or Canada, it is a toll-free number, which is always interesting. Okay, so tonight I thought I'd talk about the spiritual assertion of righteousness. You might say, what? Oh, I know. Spiritual assertion of righteousness. Okay. Well, let's kind of break that down. Spiritual is the thought of our Creator. That's spirit. Spirit is just anything that is spiritual has to do with how our Creator tends to think. It doesn't mean it is the exact thought. Not the exact thought. So I say thought of the Creator, I mean it in some reflective way. Because spirit can be added to by each of us and by all living things. We can all have some spiritual thought, so it isn't just like, this is the thought of God, and that's it, because the thought of God is evolving as we add to it. Something is spiritual when it's in the general direction of the other thoughts of God. That's the way we consider all kinds of thinking, is it in the general direction, then it would be a similar thought, right? If it's not, then it wouldn't be spiritual, and there's a lot of thought that is not spiritual that is human thought. Thinking for souls and things beyond human and, you know, that kind of stuff, that is much more often spiritual than not. But unfortunately, for us, we kind of go in the opposite direction most of the time, but not all the time. I mean, let's face it. And so if we're spiritually asserting, the assertion means to try to apply it in circumstances where others may go against it. So if you're assertive, you're trying to express yourself usually in ways that is in contradiction to other people's thinking, other people's actions, other people's whatever. You're making an assertion. And if you don't have to assert yourself, then all you're doing is you are then, in that case, agreeing. So people that need to assert themselves are needing to express themselves in some way that is somewhat in contradiction to other people. And people who are in agreement, they don't need to do that. Okay. So a spiritual assertion of righteousness. Okay, what is righteousness? Righteousness is the, I'll address it this way. Righteousness is the assertion, we'll call it, of something that supports not just your spiritual thought, but everyone else's. So something is righteous, not because it supports your spiritual thought. It might do that, and hopefully it would, of course, but it also has to be in support of other people's spiritual thought and other beings' spiritual thought. It has to support spiritual thought in general. Then it is righteous. If it doesn't support spiritual thought in general, it might support some spiritual thought, but if it contradicts spiritual thought in other ways, then it isn't righteous. Wow. Okay, did you get all that? And you might say, well, who came up with that definition? I did, of course. Could you disagree with that? You can. If you want to call in, you can say, yeah, what are you talking about? It's craziness. Okay, so tonight we're going to talk about spiritual assertion of righteousness and a few other various points. Of course, I always throw in something else. And let me say this. This is a fairly deep subject because it doesn't involve just whether or not what a person says or does. Because spiritual assertion does not have to be just what you say, it's also what you do, is right for them or even for a select number of people. It has to generally support the spiritual assertion of all others.
Wow.
Okay? So, how does this apply, like, to some of the things that are going on around us right now? Well, as I've talked about a number of times, like government. Government is there to provide a number of services. One of them is the general protection and of the welfare of the people that fall under the governing of the government. The general, we'll say, improvement of people's life without reducing by reducing as little as possible the rights and freedoms of people to create and to create more of their spiritual self. So that's part of what government does. Government, therefore, has two hats to wear. Both of them have to do with the word spiritual thought. The first hat is to try to promote freedom of choice and to improve creativity and to allow people to exercise this creativity in a way that expresses more spiritual assertion. Okay? So that's part of what government's supposed to do. And on the other side, government is supposed to make sure that the safety, welfare, a betterment of people is equally shared as best as possible and allows people to have a good way of existing, but not a way that it limits them, that is excessive. And I say excessive, excessiveness has to do with the spiritual side. So it doesn't limit their ability to be spiritual. It may limit their ability to be non-spiritual. So government may produce laws, as an example, and they do. And each law limits. By definition, a law that's applied to someone or something limits them in some way. But the law should limit people in ways that does not prevent them from being spiritually assertive. Are you following that? Okay. So if a law is made that seems to work pretty good for some people, but it reduces the ability for others, or even those people, the same people, to be spiritually assertive, that's not good. That's a problem. And usually it involves the ability to be creative and to have choices and liberty and freedom. So there is this balance that goes on. And it actually has to do with that stuff I call about ray energies, between the first type of ray energy and the second type of ray energy. Together they make thought. When they follow the general principles of our Creator, they make spiritual thought. But when they don't, they become anti-spiritual. And governments generally, if they're good governments, godly governments, then they try to prevent the kinds of things that follow non-spiritual thinking, that follow ways of destruction and harm to others, and prevent those from happening if possible. So government has an important part to play because it's the part that makes the policies that apply to the laws that are produced. Okay? Now, we have a great contentious issue right now in the United States. And that contentious issue is whether the laws that are being produced and the methods of those laws, and sometimes these are not just laws, but any kind of policy issue, so it may be something different than what we normally construct as purely a law, whether the policies of our government are at the present time trying to increase spiritual assertion of righteousness, yes, and to, at the same time, limit the harm that comes from people doing dark, selfish, and sometimes evil things, right? And we're trying to find where that balance is. And one of the best ways to achieve the balance is to have people who are leaders and parts of, therefore, the governmental system. So I'm using government just as an example at this time. who are detached from the outcomes in terms of personal gains, and they have to have a very wide, and we'll say, other focused viewpoint, meaning they cannot be, unfortunately, biased or have a political agenda, because if they do, that produces selfish results, and seldom does it result in spiritual assertion of righteousness, and then they become unrighteous, you see. Remember what that means. If you're unrighteous, you are denying other people the right to spiritually assert themselves. You're denying them the capability of being creative and free and have liberty, and you may be in the process of, or actually doing it, making laws that curtail those rights. And then, interestingly, almost all the time when that happens, ultimately the laws that they do make, that they think they're protecting some people, eventually even hurt those people. So, because if you're unrighteous, even if you start with what you believe to be a good motive, the results can be very devastating indeed. And on the worst side of it, you could become tyrannical and produce tyrannical results, meaning that the basic premises that you're working under are to destroy spiritual assertion and to reduce righteousness, and then you're following darkness. And you're doing it usually to control, have power, and to manipulate and force others to do what you might want them to do because of your own needs, your own ego, your own problems, your own whatever. Maybe even you need to just be elected. Could be a big enough motive in some circumstances. Okay, so you got to have a lot of what I'll call to be. You got to have a lot of nerve. You got to have a lot of ability to stand up against things that basically are not right, because righteousness comes from the word right. You have to say, this isn't righteous. I'm willing to sacrifice, give up me, meaning those things that are standing in the way of my being spiritually assertive, which means helping other people to do the same, and trying to make sure that there is a righteous outcome, there is a righteous group or leadership or whatever it is that is out there. And so we have an interesting problem here, because that means that if you're going to be spiritually assertive of righteousness, you're probably going to end up in a number of circumstances getting hammered, becoming a target, becoming victimized at times. That doesn't mean that you can't do something about it. And I don't mean victimized like you're going to roll over and die, but you're going to lose some battles. You're probably, you could even lose, quote unquote, the whole thing. You can lose the war. You can lose your life. But nonetheless, this is what it means to do this sort of thing. It is a huge undertaking, particularly in a world such as we have today. And what kind of world do we live in? Well, at the present time, the world is mostly, this is not all, but mostly, more than 50% corrupt. What does that mean, corruption? It means that the reasons that people are doing things, regardless of what they say on the surface, as being for goodness or right or whatever, is a lie. And underneath that, there is self aggrandizement, power, control, money, material, whatever, for a select number of people. Usually they're included in that. And that's what corruption is. Corruption is the desire and the usual action in that desire to gain for yourself. And the more that you have that desire and you act on it, the more you have a corruption of yourself in relationship to your soul, and you're forcing yourself to become something less than, different from your soul and from God, and moving in a direction of becoming a darker being. And about over half of the activities that people presently do falls into that category. The worst part about this is that it includes the people who supposedly are governing, who are judging, who are making decisions for the rest of us as representatives, supposedly, if you live in a democracy, that's a republic, for others. This is a dangerous problem, because what I'm telling you is there is more negative energies causing negative problems with negative outcomes than there are positive. And how do I know this? How do I know that? Because that sounds like, you know, like, okay, how do you know that? Someone might challenge me. And the answer is, all you have to do is look at the results. If we had over half of the people that are around us, including those that govern us, those that interact with us, those who do things for us, being uncorrupt and functioning in a way that was spiritually righteous, the outcomes would be far more positive than they presently are. I mean, it's just a matter of looking at the outcomes of various activities and events. Now, that doesn't mean there aren't good outcomes in some circumstances. Believe me, there are, especially if you have millions of people doing millions of things all the time, or billions of things. That means that there's still going to be a lot of goodness that's produced at times, but it's overshadowed by the majority in this world at this time of corruptness. Now, that's a scary thing. Now, does that mean everybody's evil? No. It means that everybody's selfish, and or most people are selfish, and being selfish more than they are giving leads to this direction of corruption within themselves. Remember, corruption is a process of internal that then is externalized as a person takes actions that are not righteous. Okay? So we really need to increase the righteousness in ourselves, and to do so that's in a way that's spiritually assertive, so it helps other people to do that. You see? Now, you could be righteous just in activities that you do, but if you're not spiritually assertive in a lot of situations, you won't help grow it in other people. And many people do that. Many people are afraid to take the extra step to be this spiritually assertive, which leads then to, of course, becoming a target and putting your neck on the line and sometimes losing money, time, creating all kinds of problems for yourself. These are some of the unfortunate outcomes while especially we live in the physical world. Now you say, well, wait a second. Well, what do you mean by that? You know, you kind of switch gears. Yeah, I kind of did. You know, I always do a little switching here and there. And that is this. This is the test of this particular time and place. Some other time, the physical world may not be this way. Some other planet, definitely not. And some other dimension of this particular planet, not so much so. While we are physically alive, the etheric physical dimension is the most difficult to live in. There is a thing that's called inertia. And the inertia means that there is an extreme penalty for any kind of activity. The third part of God's mind. Remember, the first two parts are the part that deals with the spiritual thought business. But the third part is activity. And to conduct activity, to produce any kind of spiritual thought into activity, that's where the assertion part comes in, right? That is extremely difficult because of this inertia. And there is a high cost towards all forms of activity. No matter how good you do things, no matter how spiritual you are in this dimension, this really takes effort. Now, there's less effort if you function more and more spiritually. But then you have to be spiritually assertive and get others to work with you. Just doing it spiritually alone may compound and even increase the forces, but at least it won't remove them, and so your life will become very, very difficult. The thing about spiritual assertion is you're bringing in other people, and as you bring in the other people, you become much more capable of overcoming this inertia, and then things become less and less effort. So, as a matter of fact, theoretically, if you could get enough people involved, you can reach a point called buddhic relation. If you have a buddhic relation with others, then you become all the inertia disappears and the activities become effortless. Now, that's a kind of like pie in the sky. And the fact of the matter is, I don't know too many groups of people that function in Buddhic consciousness. But that's what it takes, by the way. And there's no such thing as individual Buddhic consciousness. You have to do it with others. And you get this wonderful effect of overcoming the inertia. I think that's a great deal, by the way. But the closer you can come to that, the more people you can bring in to be of service, to work together, to be spiritually assertive, the more you can increase righteousness, and the less that the cost of doing that in terms of effort and loss of time and energy and space and all the things that are required to overcome this unfortunate problem that's part of the dimension itself and has to do with the inertia. So that's a very good thing. That's a solution to a big problem. But you've got to be thinking group level of thinking rather than just on an individual basis, you're going to go out and slay the dragon yourself. It isn't going to work that way because of the spiritual concepts involved in how the universe works. Now, you can say, well, then why can't I just wait till I go on to the astral or mental dimensions? And when I live there, it won't be so hard and that'll be fun. Well, the problem is that while we live in any particular dimension, we have to create more of God in that dimension. We have to create virtue, which is applying spirit into the form that we exist within, which in that case is the physical world, and trying to make the physical world a better place. Once you leave here, you can't do anything about it because you no longer have bodies or senses that will function here, and nothing, almost nothing you do in the other dimensions, the higher ones, will have any effect. You're just stuck. So the reason we're here is to create this while we're here. And so that excuse of, well, I'll just wait till after I'm dead to do something, it'll be a lot easier. But it will be easier to do it in those other dimensions where it's needed so much less. And then you're going to say, uh-oh, I could have done it while I was physically alive, and I chose not to. I was too selfish. That kind of regret can be almost overwhelming because your consciousness will be higher and you'll recognize the harm that was rendered by non-action or ill action and being non-righteous while you're physically alive. I hope this is making sense to all of you. I know these concepts are so big, it's hard to get your mind around them. And sometimes people say, well, I just can't remember what the guy said. It was a great idea, but I can't remember. Well, you know what? In a couple of days, this is going to be in a couple of different places on the Internet. You can go and listen to it. That's right. You can re-listen to it. You can get some friends over. Say, I heard this guy talking about this stuff. I thought it was a good idea, but I can't really repeat it right now. You can go and you can do that. And you can tell other people to do it, too. And that's a helpful thing. So if you can't quite get it on the first hearing, you can do it again. And you can get other people involved, which is even more, because then you're spiritually assertive, you see. And even when you say, well, if I tell other people about this guy's show, they're going to think I'm a kook like he is, you know. Well, that's part of it. That is part of it. You may be looked at a kook like me. I don't know. Or maybe you don't think it's kookish, maybe you just think it's different enough so other people won't necessarily see you the way they see you now. Well, yeah, that's part of it, isn't it? Your reputation, what people think of you, fitting in, maybe even having some friends, not all friends, but some friends, is based upon, you know, a spiritual sacrifice. You may have to sacrifice some of that if you're going to be spiritually assertive to gain righteousness in the world. But, you know, there's going to be others that might be better friends. There'll be others who might be better participants, co-participants with you in your activities, who you will appreciate more. So while you lose something, initially you may gain more in the lung. As a matter of fact, spiritually, it's almost all the way, always the way it works. Sacrifice in spiritual terms is giving up those things that are obstacles to us becoming greater, bigger. Now, there's a time delay. It could be a year or longer. And so you might be sitting at home twiddling your thumbs while your old friends are off having a good time doing whatever they do, because they now think you're kind of wacko for the ideas that you have. But eventually, if you keep working at it, you'll find the new friends. You'll create new connections with people who will be spiritually assertive with you and will want to create more righteousness together. That's a way better outcome. Even though there's a little interim period there where it may not be the most, you know, fun for the moment. Don't guarantee fun or even happiness as much as righteousness and joy. Those things I can almost guarantee come out of this system. But fun and happiness on any kind of short-term basis, no. Because it may go the other way for you for a short time, depending upon what your position is and what you're doing right now. So, yes, there may be some things we've got to be concerned about that you're not going to necessarily get right away. But then again, you know, patience is a good thing. It's part of the virtue process, especially while we're physically alive, because of what? Inertia. Inertia slows things down to the point where we don't see the results right away of the things that we do that are righteous in some circumstances. Sometimes we do. Sometimes it's right there, boom. But more often than not, it's a slow process and it isn't immediately present or prevalent. And so we just have to live with the fact that that's the way things are in the physics of the world that we live in right now. Not so bad. I mean, come on. We don't have to be little children who have to immediately have all our desires met, right? We can forego what we immediately want right now for something that is so much greater and so much better, being a soul and functioning in that capacity. What an amazing thing to have. Well, we are, at this point, getting to the midpoint of the show where I usually say, you know, it's time for a commercial and all that business. So I want you to think about what I've just said, and I'm going to apply more of this to more realistic. You know, the second part of the show, I always try to make it more practical. First part tends to be all this stuff that's like off in the clouds somewhere of all these concepts and things, and people go, huh? But I will apply more of it in the second part. And I actually have a little thing to talk about with you that will deal with a real life situation. I can't reveal everything about it, but I'll tell you some things. I'm going to ask for those of you who can be of assistance to do so. And maybe all people who are listening tonight, because you're in a special category, you're listening to me, right? Will do so. And I will be pleased if that's the case. The more, the better. So we'll be back in, give or take, about 2 minutes or so from right now.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hon, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. MacFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
We're back. This is Why Life Is. I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Tonight we're talking about spiritual assertion of righteousness. Oh, we'll be the righteous. And I wanted to bring up something, I just found out from our engineer, I didn't even have time to look at this. Nobody in the spiritual group I'm a member of had any time to look at it. But the Google people just came out with their quote-unquote response to something they were supposed to do in January, didn't do it. They're supposed to come out, the idea was people submit the best ideas they can for helping our world. And then they would pick 100 ideas from some group, whoever. And then everybody that wants to could vote on those 100 ideas and cut it down to 10. And out of those 10, then some of those could be awarded some level of funding. Actually, it was no small amount, actually, to kind of develop these ideas to improve our world. It made a lot of sense to me. I thought it was a great idea. And so Google was supposed to go up. This was the plan they were supposed to follow. Instead, they did not come out with anything in January. As a matter of fact, they didn't come out with anything till just now. And what they came up with was only 16 general ideas that seemed to, and I haven't looked at them myself, not apply much to just about anything, supposedly. And I'm going to tell you, we as a spiritual group contributed 8 ideas out of a whole bunch of other ones. We only picked 8 because we didn't want to overwhelm them. And I'm going to tell you about at least one of them. And these are great ideas, by the way. They really are great ideas. And at any rate, we didn't get picked, from what I've heard. I would think not, based upon the criteria would seem to be ridiculous. The other thing to be concerned about here is where's the 100 ideas and the people are involved in it, you see. And the concern is that there's corruption. Remember I talked about corruption. The corruption appears to be that maybe Google, by being completely, we'll say, unilateral in their methods and breaking all the rules that they applied, making up a new whole set of whatever they're going to do, it appears that they basically may have picked some people or ideas that they just feel like funding, having nothing to do with anybody determining and voting on it, looking at true value to the world, et cetera. That would be a very bad outcome. I'm sure all the people listening would not think that that's a very good way to go about something like that, especially when you break your agreement. You see, you made an agreement with whoever participated that you were going to do it a certain way, so it would be objective and fair, et cetera, and it turns out to be a bunch of nonsense. This is not a good thing. And for the people at Google, I tell you that you've lost a lot of credibility with me and maybe with a lot of other people. Now, the engineer that's listening, he only might be listening to the show. He's doing the job anyway. He didn't care for what they did, and he doesn't even know what our idea or ideas were. I'm going to tell you about one of our ideas just for the heck of it. I mean, I'm off the subject, but then maybe not. Phytoplankton is a plankton that grows by sunlight, one of the problems we're having right now, and I know a lot of people say, well, there is or there isn't global warming. We have this thing called solar minimus, which is cooling off the planet because it's abnormal. It was supposed to start heating it up in 06. It's now 09, and it's still cooling more and more. And it has to do with how much sunspot activity there is. There's virtually no sunspot activity, and there should be a whole bunch right now. the more sunspot activity, the more energy the sun puts out that the Earth receives. And that energy heats up the planet. And we should be in solar maximus and are moving directly forward, and we're still in this solar minimus. Now, this happens every 100, 150 years or so, that this cycle gets goofed up, which is okay because we need it, believe me. So the planet's actually cooling down when it should be heating up. That's a good thing. Now, there's a thing called the Coriolis effect. The energy that, when a planet does heat up, the energy tends to move towards the poles, producing an effect of melting the poles first, and the equator areas, the equatorial areas, tend to stay closer to normal for a while. Now, eventually, you can't get rid of all the energy and the whole planet heats up. That's a very bad outcome. But for right now, that's what's happening. The poles are running 4 or 5 degrees too warm. Now, they might be 3 or 4 degrees too warm by this point because, remember, we're cooling off and we should be heating up. That's a good thing, though. That means the poles are not melting as fast as they were, but they're still melting. I mean, Greenland's melting. All you have to do is look at the pictures, and the North Pole is in even worse condition. South Pole is melting, too, but not quite as fast as the North Pole because the Coriolis effect, strangely, and there are reasons for it, which is, gets too complicated in terms of physics, is more pronounced at the North Pole than it is at the South at the present time. He says, say, well, it shouldn't make any difference. I mean, there isn't really an up and down on the poles. It's, no, there isn't. But there is, in terms of weather patterns, an effect that moves the energy more towards the North Pole than the South. And it has to do with the ocean currents and salt and seas and all kinds of stuff. And more of the energy is moving towards the North Pole than in the South, and the winds, et cetera. And that adds to the Coriolis effect producing that. And it has to do with, you know, the Coriolis effect is just when a circular object is spinning, things move towards the axes, actually, because, you know, north and south axes. Okay, enough of that. So we've got this problem. The poles are heating up more than any place else. So we came up with this answer. It was a pretty good answer, I thought. You know, phytoplankton, great little boogers, they grow in the ocean, but they generally are kind of anywhere from a blue to a gray to a brownish green. Okay, that's their general color, which is kind of darkish. And that doesn't help you because anything that's dark that's in the ocean heats up the ocean. And our problem is that at the North Pole, particularly, and around Greenland, as the ice is melting, dark parts of the Earth are being exposed, be it seawater, and then also anything that's in the seawater, heating up the planet even more because it absorbs more energy. The ice reflects the energy and gets some of it back out into space. This was our particular answer. Change the alleles. Those are like proteins that are how a genotype becomes a phenotype, becomes expressed in an organism. It's how an organism ends up looking because of its genes. You just change some of these alleles, which isn't all that hard to do today, and because you can hybrid them, you can even change them using biotechnology. And take a phytoplankton, there are several of them, but there's a couple, one or two very good ones, that grows in the colder waters, and when the water is cold, the phytoplankton grows at a certain rate, and when it's warm, it grows at a different rate. So we can make it self-governing, and as the water cools down, the phytoplankton is actually less needed, and the ice grows more because we would change the color of the phytoplankton from this kind of darker color to near white, or maybe pure white. A white phytoplankton would serve almost as well as just ice, just white, and it would reflect the energy out of the oceans, back up into the sky, into outer space, and the planet would cool down. So you replace the species of phytoplankton that are out there with some of these other kinds, and they can't grow in the warmer, they can't grow where it's really warm. So they're not going to take over the oceans. They're only going to do the job where they're supposed to do it in the areas that we want them to grow in because they won't be growable other places. And it's a great thing. you pick the right kind. You don't change alleles in a phytoplankton that say it's going to do this at the equator. You want it to do it in the colder regions. And it would be self-limiting, and of course we would test it, make sure that it's going to do what we say it's going to do. And by the way, in case it ever did go wrong, you can kill this stuff pretty easily with a number of different ways. But for right now, let's just assume that you can do experiments and make sure that you're 99.9% sure that it's going to work. Because everybody says, oh, we got to be careful with biotechnology. You know, so, well, you know, yes, you do. But this is something that's really, really basic. It's not that hard. We're not really making a new kind of bacteria that might take over the world or something. And so this could be done in about a year. The gene sequencing, all the things that need to be done, and all the testing, be done about a year. And we could put this stuff, literally, it'll grow on its own, so you only have to place it in certain locations, and it'll start growing. And it could replace the places where ice is missing, and it provides food, which is interesting. It'll increase the life in the oceans, because those parts of the oceans now that are getting too warm, the life is decreasing there. So this will give them a better chance to live a little longer. It'll cool off the oceans in the northern regions, and ice will grow back because it'll cool off, and the plankton will be limited to where it can grow, and it's self-limiting in the fact that it can only exist where there isn't any ice or very little ice, but it needs the cold water. It's a perfect solution, in my opinion. It will solve temporarily reasonable, you know, like 5-10 degree increases in our polar areas, and give us maybe 20-30 more years to figure out how to solve global warming. Because right now we don't notice it because it's mostly happening at the poles, but in another 5 or 10 years we're going to start noticing it in the temperate and eventually everywhere on the Earth. That's a very bad outcome, one that can end our existence. This is a great outcome, and the cost is almost nothing. We're talking about at most a few million dollars compared to trillions of dollars of effect on our economy and reduction in life. This was one of the 8 ideas that we put out there that apparently was not selected by our friends at Google. Wow. Do you think that maybe they should take another look at this? If any of you know someone that wants to get involved in doing this project, forget about Google. We don't need them. I mean, we're only talking a few million dollars. We can do this, solve the whole problem. Give us a call. I mean it. Like today, tonight, tomorrow. Because we've been waiting for a long time, hoping that Google might do something. And, of course, that was a mistake. And the government's not going to do this. You say, well, what about writing a grant? They have all these grants available. One of the problems about getting these kind of grants is there's corruption in our government, and it's who you know, not how good your idea is. We've been down that road before. It's like black holes. You send your ideas into no placeville. And that's unfortunate. Now, so you see how when you don't have righteousness, you end up killing creativity and goodness at the same time. And I hope this doesn't sound like it's too self, you know, related. But it came up tonight. I mean, honestly, I didn't know about this till the break. So I'm throwing it in there. Now, I have another thing I want to tell you about. It's worthwhile to talk about it because it's a practical solution. You might say, what about the other things you got? Okay, I'll throw out something really fast. We came up with this thing called dry desert microcatch and farming. I'm not even going to get into what that is. It's sort of like harvesting water from bigger areas and apply it to smaller areas so plants could grow, along with a thing called this is hydrophilic polymers. I know these are big words. It's just like a bunch of, think of it as a bunch of little tiny microscopic plastic particles that can hold hundreds and hundreds of times their weight in water. They like blow up really big. And you can put them in the ground, and for a week to a month, they'll add moisture to plants. But after that, because they're in the ground, they just lose it into the ground. Well, we came up with another way of solving that problem. so that we can make it last 4 to 5 months total, and plants in the worst type of desert areas can grow as long as there's rain every, say, 5 to 6 months, which is almost everywhere except like Death Valley. One of our biggest problems, again, dealing with some of the global warming issues, is the thing called desertification, and this is another major solution. I'm talking about, and this is so cheap, it lasts like 10 years at a time. The cost is de minimis, you know, and we could feed 60% of the world population right now is in jeopardy of starving to death, especially if desertification continues as it has been for the last 25 years. I'm not kidding you. And this is another simple solution. If you're interested in that, we got 6 or 7 or 8 more other solutions. Give us a call. Let us know. I mean, if you've got any kind of resource, be it money, time, energy, if you're a biologist, a geneticist, if you're a farmer, whatever you've got that you could contribute or do something about, call us. We're right here. We're right here and we're ready to go on this stuff. No kidding. Okay. Now, I'm running out of time here. God, I can't believe this. Let me tell you about spiritual assertion of righteousness in facing issues, because I'm going to talk about us again. And I don't want this to sound like it's all about us, but I don't know how else to describe some of this, because it's very central, and you've got to kind of have examples that really look real, and this is real stuff, right? And I wish this show was 2 hours long, because we need it for this kind of subject. For years, we as a spiritual group, and others helping us sometimes, have been involved in a terribly corrupt situation. People have been doing all kinds of terribly corrupt things. Everyone from a superior court judge to some other people are doing very bad things, criminal things. We've reported them as crimes to various sources, federal and state sources. But it doesn't matter, because the criminal things are very difficult to prove. And the people that investigate them oftentimes have their hands full with so much other stuff that they're not willing to really do much. It's unfortunate, but that's, again, and that's because of corruption, you could say. I mean, that's because they're not being as righteous as they should be, at least. At any rate, so at the present time, I'm going to just let you understand that we have been fighting this. Now, sometimes things happen to people who are doing good things because others want to take from them, others want to do harm to them for reasons that they may not even understand. They may understand they want to steal, they may understand they want to get something that they don't deserve for nothing, but they may be motivated for really dark reasons behind the scenes. Because they're semi-possessed, because they're somewhat controlled by even darker elements that they're even not aware of in themselves. And I believe that is happening sometimes to us, because we as a spiritual group are trying to assert ourselves and to be righteous as much as we can. Does that mean we're perfect? No, we're not perfect. Does it mean we don't make mistakes and sometimes are selfish ourselves? Of course, we do. We're human beings. But it means in general we try to apply these principles. And at the present time, we need some help. I'm going to tell you what we need help with. We need help in dealing with some of this really bad corruption. I mean, really, really bad. We have a lawyer and all that other stuff, but we need like someone who is like almost a kind of really well-rounded litigating type of lawyer who could practice legally in Arizona. That doesn't mean they have to live in Arizona. They have to be able to practice in Arizona, because that's where our group is, and that's unfortunately where we have to work from. You can't just, in our country, you can't work just anywhere if you're a lawyer. Some countries, it doesn't matter, but here in the United States, it does. And so we need somebody right away, I mean, like, within the next few days, to write a couple of things as co-counsel with our other attorneys. And because we're out of the time and energy necessary to do some of the stuff we need to do. And it will involve even working with possibly some investigative agencies, you know, governmental agencies, et cetera. But the most important thing is that we need to do this right away, and we need several people who would volunteer or do it for some, you know, minimal amount of charge to help us get this stuff done that has to be done. If there's anybody out there that can do it, you will be working with spiritual assertion of righteousness. You'll be right there working with us in it. Does that mean that you might give up something? Possibly. I don't know. Certainly some time and energy, possibly for just a few days. But still, we need people to help us. And the reason for this is, again, we have put ourselves out there. We could just, not do that. But we do it because we believe that the things that we're doing are very helpful and important. The projects that I'm talking about are connected, especially the hydrophilic polymers, all that stuff, was connected to trying to save the planet and do things and helpful, and these others have really, really tried to stop us. I'm not kidding you. It sounds absurd. You may think I'm paranoid, but I'm not. I'm telling you the truth. And, of course, if we could talk about it in more detail, I'm not going to reveal names or people. I wouldn't do that, not on the air. But the point is that, this is something that anybody who's out there who's listening could be of some help if they have the right credentials or abilities. And if you know somebody who can help, that's great. If you're paralegal, you possibly can help. Even if you work in another state, it's possible you can help in some ways to write things as what's called ghostwriting. It may not serve as co-counsel, but you can do things like that, too. In other words, you don't even have to technically be licensed in Arizona, although it would be better to have somebody like that, but we would even take those who are not, because everybody can help. There's always a way to be of some assistance in circumstances where things are really going south. And I mean, they are going south. Things are terrible in terms of the amount of hits and attacks that we as a spiritual group have been under. We kind of have learned to expect this. The more you try to be spiritually assertive, the more you're risking attacks from those who are on the unrighteous side of things. They will come after you sometimes, and they can be brutal and do terrible things. It's the way of the world as we exist right now. Now, does that mean that our world is doomed? No. It means that more and more of us have to really put ourselves out. We've got to be able, we've got to be willing to risk our necks sometimes. And it's going to cost sometimes. Sometimes you'll lose money. Sometimes you'll lose reputation. Other times, you might even risk some kind of severe kind of attack. Could be maybe someone will try to kill you. It's possible. I don't think it'll happen in the situation I just described. But, there have been a lot of crimes committed against us. So you need to understand that, too. I mean, anything's possible. You never know. Although I don't think it is in a situation specifically, but it depends. And so it is important always to recognize that you're putting yourself out. And even if it costs you your life, then you've done something truly pretty much remarkable. If you are spiritually assertive and you're righteous, and it ends up costing you your life, then you're a hero, and you've done some amazing things. So it isn't something to lament and to feel terrible about. It's something to say, wow, if that happens to me, you're going to go on and live in another dimension. We're all going to die someday. What we die for is more the important issue, isn't it? And what we live for before we die for it, if we do die for it, is the most important thing. And living for righteous actions and being spiritually assertive is probably one of the greatest things we can all do, because then we're living for the rights of everybody else to live the same way. We're trying to help them to do the same way. We become an example of the very things that we claim to believe in. I hope this makes some sense to you. I hope today's show has made some sense to you. I wish we had more time, because if we did have more time, I would talk a lot more about this particular subject. I want to remind you, I'm still using ideal cell sorption, resveratrol, or the dogs and all, and it stuff works. We got an email from someone that we know pretty well, and she told us it's working amazingly well, and she's in her 80s and just I think she's listening right now. So at any rate, if you have a chance, look at foreveryoungproducts.com if you're interested in that product. We are out of time. So listen, until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.